You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Season Has Started edition of Sharing Socks. I am Southside Sox duty geezer Lee Allen. With me, my son and West Coast correspondent Will, and we are recording on Thursday, which is the 3rd of April.
Fourth of April,
and means that it is after the initial homestand, where the Sox got incredibly, I mean, they're 1-4, but they were incredibly lucky on two things. One is on Wednesday, of course, Will, you weren't here. It was miserable. In fact, it was miserable for the whole Atlanta trip here, but it was really miserable on Wednesday. So they postponed the game till June sometime. They were going to go up one of the best pitchers in baseball with a bullpen day against Atlanta. It was going to be like 45-0. and they got kind of sleet, snow, whatever it out. So that was a fortunate break. And the one win against Atlanta, of course, the spokespeople are going, oh, unlucky one-run losses to Detroit. There wasn't a whole lot of luck involved there. They were just regular one-run losses. The one win, they won against Atlanta, two of the three runs the Sox scored were on pop-ups, you know, just loop singles that happened to be in a place nobody could get to who did? Anyhow, somebody hit him. I know Andrew Vaughn had one of them. So otherwise, you know, the Sox, other than those two bloops, have no RBI other than home runs.
Wow.
You know, the only other run that wasn't a home run was a double steal. Only run, other wasn't home, was a double steal. The offense.
Well, here's my favorite stat so far. Mookie Betts is outscoring the White Sox by 5 runs. He is also outscoring the Mets, who have played more games than the White Sox.
Yeah.
And to be fair, the Dodgers have played 9 games. The White Sox have only played 5. However, Mookie Betts, I believe, is outscoring the White Sox 14-11, which is pretty impressive for one man to outscore multiple teams in baseball at this point of the season.
Well, the White Sox, if you talk about the offense, they are 29th in batting average, 30th in on-base percentage, because, of course, as usual, they are 29th in walks. They are mid-range and homers. We've had to talk for years. They're just going to have home runs. We're going to have home runs. Home runs are going to do it. We've got to have home runs. We're not doing it because we don't have it. Well, their average on home runs, they're at the very bottom in scoring runs at 29th. And we went for speed. Chris Katz, we're going for speed. We've got to do speed. Now, he's been right about defense. Defense has been much, much better.
Much better. Much better.
For speed, we have 1 stolen base.
That seems low. Considering last year,
and that stolen base—that stolen base was in the double steal.
Wow, wow, yeah. Last year, I think
the only reason we got it is because the catcher was slow throwing to second to get Nicky Lopez. So the runner on third had an opportunity to score.
So last year, 20 teams in MLB had 100 stolen bases or more. We are obviously not on pace to get there, and 80% of the steals were successful. So maybe if we just start stealing every single time we get a guy on base, actually, I still don't think it will work because we don't get guys on base. That's challenging as well.
It's 29th.
Let's talk about a good thing because there's a lot to
let's talk about Garrett Crochet.
Let's talk,
or do you want to talk
about
hitters while we're on hitters?
No, I'm talking about Garrett Crochet. Crochet in two starts has looked how I think we all dreamed Garrett Crochet would look, and actually much better than that.
That's one walk, 13 innings.
And everything's looking good. I mean, every pitch is looking good. The command is looking good. The confidence is looking good. I mean, he is a totally different pitcher. He looks like an absolute ace on the mound. And I always thought Crochet was going to be good, but I expected him to be good in a bullpen role. I never expected him to all of a sudden be an opening day starter and through two starts to look as good as any pitcher in Major League Baseball. I mean, Garrett Crochet is giving us something to watch and something to keep an eye on, because the way he has looked the first two times, of course, you can chalk it up to team's bats not being quite warmed up yet, people not knowing what he's going to throw quite yet. But he has looked to me above this is an early season fluke. He has looked to me like
And
an
he gets the ball.
absolute
He gets the
ace.
ball and throws the ball.
Yep.
He doesn't sit there and screw. I mean, I realize you got the pitch clock now, so you can't screw around like the old days and just kind of wander around the infield for an hour between pitches. But he's Mark Burley. He pitched opening day 2 hours and 3 minute game.
Wow.
Yes, it was a 1-0 game. Nobody was taking up time running around the bases. But 2 hours and 3 minutes, that's still amazing. He's not waiting for the pitch clock to go down to 1 second and then throwing the ball. He's been great. And I'd say the first game, you're going, well, it's against Detroit, and they really got no offense, which they don't. But the second one was against Atlanta. They really have offense.
I mean, Atlanta is made out of offense. They eat offense for breakfast. That they are an offensive juggernaut.
They scored 9 runs the day before.
And he made them look like the exact opposite of that. I mean, watching Crochet pitch is, the White Sox are obviously very bad and they're going to continue to be very bad, but the getting to watch a guy go out there and just kind of dominate in his first two starts when we didn't even think this guy was going to be a starter earlier this year. It's spectacular to watch. And I love everything about the way he pitches. I love what you're talking about in terms of just getting the ball and getting it back to the catcher. I love his form. I mean, he's an intimidating presence. The form looks really good. It looks very smooth. It looks very healthy. The big thing we're going to run into with Garrett Cole, not Garrett Cole, Garrett Crochet. Garrett Cole's got his own problems.
Very similar now.
With Garrett Crochet is this guy actually going to make it into August as a starter? He just hasn't pitched that
Yes,
much.
that's the worry with him. It is a worry with Soroka as well. And again, I'm not trying to be the pitching expert. I am relying on pitching expert Steve Stone. And what Stoney says is you can't ramp up a pitcher normally. There are going to be exceptions. We hope this is one or two. You can't ramp up a pitcher from pitching almost nothing to pitching a whole season. He was saying it mainly after 2020, where nobody pitched the equivalent of a whole season. And he was right. Pitchers were really wearing down. And we have to really watch. And I kind of didn't like that they gave Crochet an extra inning on opening day, because I would think you want to preserve every pitch on him that you can. Let's get him through the season. At least let's get him through August. Soroka, we only care if he's good until July, because he's being traded. Unless he's god
If
awful
he's
and he has
any
not.
good,
If he's any good at all, he's being traded. If it has to be for somebody's 500th prospect, he's getting traded.
he's gone. Yeah, absolutely. Whether or not he'll be good enough to get that, I don't know yet. That remains to be seen. It's actually really interesting across baseball. So, I'm kind of pitch count obsessed. I've been pitch count obsessed on this podcast the entire time, mainly because if you're watching Dylan Cease pitch, you become pitch count obsessed, because the guy was throwing 100 pitches in 3 innings. I am shocked how many pitchers are hitting the 100 pitch mark already. We're seeing it all over baseball. Last night, they let Tyler Glasnow at the Dodgers come out for a guy who's got an injury history, come out and throw the sixth inning and get to 100 pitches. I went through all of the starters yesterday, across Major League Baseball just to look at pitch counts because I'm a pitch count nerd. And Almost every game had a pitcher that went 100 pitches, which for April 3rd is bonkers. I mean, you haven't really seen that back in the days when guys did actually throw 120 pitches every game. It's really, really interesting the shift in that this year. I expected a lot more starters to be coming out, being kept to a hard 5 innings, in some cases being kept to a hard 4 innings if things aren't looking spectacular. And we're seeing a lot of guys throw a lot of pitches really early, which I do believe is a doable thing in Major League Baseball. I actually think it's a more doable thing with the pitch clock, because guys can't do that walk around the mound and amp up to try to throw at 100% on every single pitch. You have to pitch a little more strategically with the clock. You have to think about how long you can stay in the game with that time constraint. You have to think about how much energy can I get back for each pitch? I'm obviously not going to be able to get back to 100% for each pitch here. Am I trying to get up to 80% for each pitch? If I can get my fastball up to 90%, how am I going to pace myself throughout this game in a healthy way where I'm not taking so much off of the ball here that I become incredibly hittable? So it's been really interesting to see across baseball how much we are seeing from starters here, including Crochet. I've been shocked that he has had the long leash that he's had. But he has looked really, really good deep into games still.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
And that's
The
exciting.
rest of the starters have been okay, but blah. I mean, they got through their games the way they're supposed to, and they're just okay. But I was looking at the pitching stats, and this is a fascinating one. I don't know that I've ever seen this before. Okay, Michael Kopech, we know, put tons of people on base, but got out of it. All right. So he now has, of course, we're 5 games in, and we're talking relief pitchers, so maybe 2 or 3 innings. Kopech has a 2.08 ERA. Hey, that's really good. And of course, the FIP is where we go. Well, now we're gonna, this is a background information here that lets you know how he really was. His FIP is 6.76. I've never seen that differentiation. 208, 6.76. It's usually, well, the ERA is 3.25, but the FOP is 3.82, so he's not quite that good. The reverse, Davey Garcia, 6.75 ERA, 0.67 FIP. Never
Wow.
seen those. Now, because obviously, because you have this incredibly small sample size at this point, but it's still fascinating to see that
I've
reversal.
never seen differentials like that either. And who knows what differentials like that really mean because they're so absurd this early in the year. The other starters, fine. Kind of
Yeah,
just
they're really just
making it
okay.
through. Of course, there was a signing of another starter, which will be very interesting. A guy who has not really been preparing, with a team all spring, and now he's coming back to us. I'm not very excited about it, but he is a
Well,
guy
it's in,
who
it's in,
can go out there.
I wrote a piece that's not out yet, but probably will be by the time this is on the site. That this is a big middle finger to the fans on the part of Jerry Reinsdorf and Chris Getz. It is just a screw you fans. We don't care about you, which is common for them, but this is really demonstrative. Last year, and I'm going to use his name. Last year, when we signed Mike Clevinger, he was known to be a horrible teammate because what he did in Cleveland. And so horrible that his teammate said, he goes or we go, which they could do in 2020 because they could go with COVID. Horrible man. But we didn't know about the domestic abuse. Presumably, Rick Hahn didn't know either. That's what he says. And MLB is kind of tight on these things. I'm surprised they don't leak, but maybe they don't. This year, all of the domestic abuse is out, and I know the misogynist crowd is going, well, he wasn't sentenced or anything. He was exonerated. He was not exonerated. They simply said they weren't going to do a suspension and punishment at this time. Olivia Fine said specifically ask them not to. I listened to her interview on The Score, which was half an hour long. And she said, I would hope they don't suspend him because his paycheck feeds my baby.
Yeah.
So, which was a very honest comment. So it was not exonerated. Now they go back in. Now last year we needed a starting pitcher. We thought we'd get better, right? The team had been 500, had aspirations of winning the division, certainly. Certainly not the total collapse that happened. This year, there's no reason for it. Why? What difference does it make? If Mike Clevenger is a four war pitcher, then instead of 105 losses, we have 101. Who cares? Plus, it's a 1 year contract he's got. Aren't we supposed to be developing young guys so there's a future for this team?
Yeah.
There's no 2024. I think there's no 2025. There should be young guys. Yes, you don't want to bring them up or they're going to get crushed. And unfortunately, Lindastrini in his first game for Charlotte was just absolutely beaten to death.
About, yeah.
But there we have it. I mean, if you have to bring up Tuki Toussaint, you know, bring him up. What does it matter if he loses every game? It just doesn't matter. And to do this in the face of the fans, and it's a very large segment of the fan base, to do that, we do on the site where we don't mention Mike Clevenger's name. I think we have to go to the point where we don't mention Jerry Reinsdorf's name or Chris Getz's name because they're responsible for this. They know the situation. They absolutely know the situation, what kind of total asshole this man is, and they brought him back for no good baseball reason. And, I mean, it's just it is a middle finger to the fans big time. And we've had this thing with the 78 and we want $1 billion and maybe $2 billion for the taxpayers. And our idiot mayor is going, oh, yeah, well, maybe we'll do that. Fortunately, the governor is going, no way, because he's a billionaire and he ain't scared of billionaires. But I think Johnson is scared of billionaires because he's an idiot. And I mean, it's soapboxing and I know
yeah,
we shouldn't be soapboxing on that, but I'm done with the totally immoral attitude of this team that goes along with, you know, you and I 25 years ago when they got Albert Bell and then Frank Thomas was in his whiny stage. We went, you know, we've rooted for you for all your life and me for most of my life. We've rooted for this team that's really not very good. But we do it because we like the team and we like the guys. If they're going to be total jerks on the team, maybe we need another team. That's when we went to Tampa. We had a nice weekend in St. Petersburg.
Yeah, watching them get swept by the Yankees.
Yeah. Watching them get crushed by the Yankees. Said, well, maybe that's not a good idea. But I think, you know, it may be team hunting time again. You know, and it's a shame. As you know, them a few blocks from Wrigley Field cannot make that transition. That cannot happen. Will not happen. Ever.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at what the possible baseball reasons could be. So your possible logic here is you bring in Clevenger, he's lights out, you flip him at the deadline. Is that a logical point of view? I don't think it is because everybody had a chance. Everybody had a chance to get him, and nobody wanted him.
They had a chance at the deadline. Chance of the deadline last year didn't take. Now you could say, well, that was because of money, because they had that idiotic $4 million buyout. The team would be stuck with that for 2 months of pitching, and it just didn't make sense economically. So nobody took it. That they had the whole offseason without that burden. Any team could have taken them. Most of the teams have some hope of making the playoffs. There are probably 20 teams that have at least a decent shot if they play well. To their maximum of making the playoffs. Everybody needs starting pitching. And none of them took that step. And in goes Chris Getz. And I know for this, he had to have the approval of Jerry Reinsdorf. And I think Reinsdorf hates the fans. He hates us. I mean, they blame fans for everything. Well, the fans don't come out, so you have to give us $2 billion to go to this other stadium. The fans don't do this. The fans don't do that. Because you put a piece of crap on the field, Jerry.
And how is that line of thinking going in Oakland? You see these owners who blame the fans for things. I don't think I've ever seen it end well. I mean, it is a really, really bad ownership stance to say to pin these things on your fan base. And now we've got the Sacramento A's. It is the start of very, very bad things for your organization.
I just read this morning before we recorded what Oakland was paying, has been paying for the Coliseum. They've been paying $97 million a year rent, and that Oakland had offered to take that down to 60. Jerry Reinsdorf has averaged paying $1.5 million in rent,
Well,
a tiny fraction of what the
I don't think Oakland was paying that annually. I don't think it was 97 annually. I think it was going to be 97 over 3, which is still 30 something
vastly
million.
more, yeah.
Yeah, vastly, vastly more. And now Oakland's baseball's done in Oakland, maybe forever. I obviously don't want to see that happen to the White Sox. I do not want the White Sox to end up leaving Chicago, but I wouldn't put it past Reinsdorf to do a bonehead move like they are doing in Oakland right now and just depleting the fan base because you blame them over and over for your mistakes and for the failure of your business. I mean, for a billionaire, Reinsdorf has just no business sense when it comes to baseball, when it comes to how this works, and it's embarrassing. And we are in a really, really bad position as fans of this franchise.
But I don't think he cares because MLB's financial situation has changed so much, which is why the teams with very low payrolls do that year after year. Some of them, of course, are brilliant at doing that, like Tampa
Tampa.
Bay.
Yeah.
Milwaukee's really, really good at it.
Absolutely.
And that's if I'm going to another team, that's where I'm going north. It's a 2-hour drive. I'll go there.
I think
But
that's a
there are teams
good
that
call.
are very
Yeah.
good at that. But there are teams that just play the game, which Oakland has done for a while, because so much of their income is shared. It's all from TV, national TV rights, national online rights. So it's a huge amount of shared income. They can actually have,
Merchandise stuff is
yeah,
a very
it's very much
shared.
shared. Yeah.
Yeah.
They can have a $40 million payroll. Now, obviously, that's not their total expense. They have a lot of other expenses, but that's the biggest one. They can have a $40 million payroll and run a $30 million profit just off shared of expenses. If somebody happens to wander in the park, great. Otherwise,
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. We should take our break here, and we do need to come back and talk about the offensive side
Yes,
of
I've
the
got some
baseball.
stats. I've got batter to batter here.
Oh, I'm sure they are glowing as well. As I saw this morning, Moncada is of eligible players our highest batting average at what, 268 or 286? It's one of those two numbers.
Yeah, two. I think it's where I've got to. No, write this down. Yeah, 263.
263. Yeah. So, that's a 5 games in having nobody who's eclipsing that is pretty brutal. But we will be right back. Hang in there and we'll see you in a minute on Sharing Socks. Welcome back to Sharing Socks. We talked about starting pitching in the first half and also about our bonehead owners and their latest acquisition. But let's talk about the Atacama Desert, which is our offense at the
Okay,
moment.
we I did at the outset of some of the team things, last in the majors on not 29th in average, 30th in on base percentage, all that. Individually, Martin Maldonado over 12. He's zero on the season. Again, very small sample sizes. Of course, he didn't catch every game either. This one I think is just going to go by the boards. Dominic Fletcher, I think from some point in May last year, where they figured out how to pitch him. He'd been hitting 450. And they figured out how to pitch him, and he ended up 301, but that was hitting 150 the rest of the year. Did not hit in the spring. He's hitting 091. He's had tremendous throws. He's throwing two guys out, one at third and one at home. I mean, he's got a hell of an arm. I think he misplayed a ball into a double the other day, but tremendous throw, and he's much better than any other right fielder we've had out there, even if he makes mistakes, and he defensively than any right fielder we've had out there for years.
but he can't hit a lick, and he's not going to start hitting a lick. I make that prediction. Benintendi, he's saying, well, he had a bad year last year. He'll break out of it. He's hitting 150. Nicky Lopez, who I love, but he's hitting 167. Vaughn, 188. DeJong, 182, but he has two homers, including a big one in the victory. Eloy, prior to being unable to run to first base again, was hitting 182 after hitting roughly 900
With
in
no
spring
base on
training.
balls, with no base on balls.
Well, of course, in walks, the team is 29th in the majors. Luis is hitting 250 and with two homers and four RBIs. Okay. 10.
The two homers were great, but he's at a 10-to-1 strikeout to walk ratio right
10
now. 10
strikeout
strikeouts
in five
through
games.
5 games. He's
That's
only
a
had 20
300
at
strikeout
bats.
pace. And
He's at a
it's
50% strikeout rate.
and you know
50%.
he's our superstar. I love him. He's a great ball player. He's a very quiet guy. Certainly nothing negative about him as a person. But my goodness, it's time after time breaking balls. I would hope that, well, I know I would hope, and I hope it's the other way, but nobody's going to throw him a fastball. If they throw him a
Now.
fastball, it's going to be 2 feet out of the zone just for the fun of it. Everything is breaking pitches, and he swings at them all.
It looks totally lost. Looks as lost as he did against sliders that he did in 2020. I mean,
Yeah, and you thought
it's
that's been overcome, but all he's got going for him, if somebody hangs one, somebody hangs a slider or curveball, it may go 600 feet. But
But they
unless
really
they,
have to hang it. They really have to hang it,
unless
is
they
what we're
make a
seeing.
mistake, wow, he just looks awful. And you go, hey, we got a guy on base, Luis is up, wow. And then you watch him at bat, goodness, what happened to this man?
Yeah, I mean he's in reality only had one good game, and that good game was very flashy. He hit a ball into, South Bend, but it was really just one game. And other than that, I mean, a 50% strikeout rate, you have to hope doesn't hold up because it would
Oh,
be
yeah.
the worst maybe ever. That is just absurd to have 10 strikeouts through 5 games. I mean, you are on pace to destroy the record for most strikeouts in a season. And of course, it's very, very early, and maybe some of this can turn around, but he's striking out. He's really not getting on base. He's got three extra base hits. Two of them are the home runs. He's not taking walks. He's got the one walk. Yeah, as you mentioned before,
And
on base
the one
percentage.
walk was the inning where we handed a game back to Detroit, where they had a reliever come in who couldn't find the zip code, and he walked Maldonado on 4 pitches, and then Benintendi on 6 pitches, the two that he put in there just cripples, and then we went to Moncada, who 3-0, and gets the cripple to 3-1, and then swings at two balls in the dirt. And that's the
Unbelievable.
then followed Luis, and he took his walk, thankfully. And then, of course, Eloy came up and hit into a double play, and that was that. I covered that game and said that was it. That was the inning. It was over. They
Yeah,
ended up losing at
you
10,
can't
but
get guys
it was
in and
over.
can't get guys in that scenario. You can't win baseball games, no doubt about it. I always think about the famous Moneyball scene where they're sitting around the table with all the scouts, and you've got Brad Pitt saying over to Jonah Hill, these scouts are arguing, don't get these guys, don't get these guys. And Brad Pitt goes, but what does he do? And Jonah Hill says he gets on base. And that scene could not exist with this team. Our on base percentage is so terrible. I think it's what, 244 or something like that. Just an absolutely abysmal effort to get on base by these White Sox so far. You cannot win games with a 244 team on base percentage. You absolutely cannot win games unless you have somehow the mid-90s Braves starting rotation who give up one run a game. You cannot win baseball games with a team 244 on base percentage. That's
Now,
just absurd.
to give credit to those who are hitting some, Of course, Luis with the two homers, so we mentioned the 10 Ks. You on 263. That's fine. He's a good fielding third baseman. And if he shows some power, and he's hit a triple and two doubles, he's hitting extra. He hasn't gone out yet, but he's getting those. And he has an 807 OPS. That's very good. The two best hitters on the team, though, are Braden Shumake, who was hitting 300 with a 900 OPS because he hit a homer. Of course, since
Right.
it's on, these guys have almost no at bats. Shumake may have half a
He
dozen. And
is 10. Yeah.
yeah, Corey Lee has a 1.250 OPS. Because he's one for four, but that one for one hit was a homer. But
Yeah.
you wonder how long. Maldonado's got to be here because the young pitchers, and really that's not even true. The pitchers aren't that young.
No.
Other than Crochet.
Yeah.
But when we get our other old catcher back off the IL, presumably they're going to send down Corey Lee. I think they got to keep a young catcher and an old catcher, but and
Yeah.
not go with the two older catchers that can't hit at
Here's a
all.
question for you, because you've been able to watch more than I have over the last few days. How's the eye test on Braden Shumate?
It's not bad.
From the little bit I've
Not
seen,
bad.
it's certainly kind of there's a little glimpse of something there, that he could be a good, person to have there until we get Colson Montgomery ready to play Major League Baseball. I'm kind of
He's fast.
intrigued.
If you get he's got speed, which means helps you get on base in the first place and then helps you advance bases after that. At the plate, he doesn't look lost.
Yeah.
He doesn't look as lost as several of our veterans look.
Well,
Watch
here's
Andrew
what I'll
Vaughn at the
say.
plate.
He's 3 for 10. He's got no strikeouts, and he's got our only stolen base. We have to
Which
kind
was
of
up
dig
home.
for we have to kind of dig for positive things to find to say about this team right now. And I think Braden Shumake is an interesting positive thing that's happening.
Yeah. Now, you want an interesting thing, I thought. Okay, Aloy did this thing on an adductor, whatever that may be, and he's going to be out. They didn't know if he was going to go on the IL. So they had to
Yeah.
bring some, they brought somebody up from Charlotte. Casey goes on the IL, so we'd have a full roster going. And who did they bring up? Lenine Sosa,
Right.
who is hitting well in Charlotte. He always hits well in Charlotte. He's a 4A player. He hits really well in Charlotte. He can't hit major league pitching. But forgetting that, you've got Lopez and DeJong, who you brought in specifically to be some experienced defensive players. That's who we want. That's our goal here is defense and experience up here. You've got Shumake doing an excellent job of being the utility guy, and certainly can play third as well if need be. So you've got the why do you replace your DH with a utility infielder when you've got one? You can't keep a whole team of utility
Yeah.
infielders, I hope.
Well, I think the answer is we got nobody to bring up. I guess they're just trying to bring up a guy who has seen major league time. Eloy, I don't know. I get the vibe that Eloy's kind of done, and I hope that's not true, but he certainly has no value at this current time. He's a DH who doesn't hit the ball, and he's hurt all the time. His spring was incredible, and then you get back to real Major League Baseball, and he just looks lost. He looks completely lost. I don't know that there's any future for Eloy Jimenez on this team, and I don't know who would want him at this time. I think unloading him in the spring would have probably been your best move. Try to shop him somewhere for some low-level prospects. Because certainly right now he's just kind of dead in the water.
Well,
I don't know what you could even do with him.
he's not swinging, flailing the way Luis is at breaking
Yeah.
pitches, but he's going up there pretty much intent on hitting the ball in the first pitch every time. And like when he grounded out with the bases loaded, it was off the plate. It was an inside pitch, several inches inside.
These guys, other teams have players who discriminate in when they swing.
Right.
The Sox, and this isn't this year. I mean, this has been a decade-long problem. Well, it's, I mean, they call the old swings, the out of zone swings. I didn't look at those stats today, but every year, the worst or the next worst in baseball. And
Well, what's interesting is, there is a dreaded thing for me in baseball, which is when you're looking at an offensive stat line, when that batting average matches the on-base percentage. And I realize we're only through 5 games, but currently the batting average for Eloy matches the on-base percentage, and they're both very low numbers. That is exactly what you're saying. That's a guy who's going up saying, "I'm swinging at anything. I'm swinging right away. I'm swinging at the first pitch. I'm probably going to swing at the second pitch. And if the third pitch is anywhere near home plate," and by that I just mean like within a foot, I'm swinging, because to have an OBP that matches a batting average is it's kind of the beginning of the end. And I realize we are only 5 games in, so it's not quite that dramatic. But he is just kind of doing everything wrong right now. And his OPS is 364, which is painfully low. He's already sitting at a negative WAR. I just don't know what you do with Eloy Jimenez. If he can even be on the field, which he rarely seems to be able to do anymore, I don't know what your spot is for him. A DH that doesn't get on base isn't a very helpful DH,
Yeah, and yes, he can hit the ball very, very, he hits the ball hard, very often, tends to always be on the ground, which is a problem. But
When
yeah,
you're a
I'm,
guy like that, that's a huge problem. Yeah. A guy who has no chance of an infield single ever. You certainly don't want him hitting the ball on the ground.
It's the story was that he had changed his hands over the winter on somebody, some relative or friend, and an older guy in the Dominican Republic had noticed something about his hand placement, and he had changed that, and boy, he came out in the spring was, like, say, hitting 900 or something. He thought, wow, that's it. He thought, that's probably going to change where he's vulnerable, because if before he was in place X, he was vulnerable before he switched his hands. So now he clobbers those, place Y maybe, but that doesn't mean a total collapse. And it did
Yeah.
change. But you get into the regular season where people are in spring, they don't pay that much attention to the scouting reports of exactly who should be throwing more. Yes, they pay attention, but they don't have the time. You got minor league pitchers, you got minor league everything in front
Yeah.
of them. There are just so many people. I mean, you can't do the in-depth research that most teams, not the White Sox, but most teams do on each individual player. And but once the regular season starts, you can. And that's a problem.
Yeah. Before we transition out of this podcast today, I just want to bring up one of my favorite things ESPN does, which is their annual watchability index.
Oh, it's the top of my page. The top of my
Yeah.
page.
So the Whites, if you don't know about this, it's a cool article ESPN does where they have various factors: star power, youth, base running, catches.
Defense is big.
Defense, a category called minutia. And then basically they rank from 30 down to 1, your watchability index, how enjoyable it can even be to watch a game. The White Sox are not last, so that's good.
What?
Sorry to the Washington Nationals fans out there. They have defeated the Nationals by half a point, which
Because,
makes them,
did you
because
see
of the new
why?
campfire milkshake.
Yes, and were it not for the campfire milkshake, they would have been last because the guy
Yeah.
gave one whole point to the campfire milkshake, which is the only reason to go to the ballpark, but it makes for a really expensive milkshake by
And
your
also,
and your
I
parking.
gotta say, unless you are in the ballpark, I don't think the campfire milkshake should apply to the watchability index, unless they are shipping them. I mean, I would love it if you turned on a White Sox game and it automatically meant you got a milkshake shipped to your house. I don't see Reinsdorf spending the money for that. Yeah, the White Sox would be dead last without the campfire milkshake bonus point.
Oh, and on that, now I don't know the truth of this. I just saw it online, and there's veracity is not necessarily a big item there. But I saw somebody's comment that at the game Saturday, I think it was, they ran out of them. I mean, it's been so popular. There's been thousands a game of these campfire milkshakes. They sound absolutely delicious. They ran out, and then somebody trying to get one was told, "We have to save the rest for VIPs." That's another fan in your face. If it's true, that's another real,
You got one thing that fans are
another middle
excited
finger to
about.
the fans right there.
Wow, that's a bold move, especially because how many VIPs are the White Sox even bringing in right now? Is that just
On a
Reinsdorf's
Saturday, on a bad
family?
weather Saturday game against Detroit. Yeah.
I
Actually,
mean,
that weather is pretty good that day.
credit to that milkshake because it is cold in Chicago and it has been miserable and they're selling out of campfire milkshakes. So credit to that milkshake for pulling so much weight in this watchability index. In fact, the more we talk about it, the more I think it might be worth its whole bonus point. Unfortunately, it only applies if you're in the ballpark. So those 2,000 people are the ones who will have a chance to have it. They did not score well in any other category. They have a 2 in star power, which is only because of Luis Robert. They have a 2 in base running, which is probably only because of Luis Robert. They have a 3 in catches, which is almost a guarantee that's because of Luis Robert. So if you took Luis Robert out of these rankings, I'm not sure we'd be at a 12. I think we'd be closer to a 2 or a 3. Add in the campfire milkshake might get us up to a 4. But the watchability index is very, very interesting to me because it's a little ruthless the way they do it, and I appreciate that. Currently my hometown team here, the Dodgers, are first in watchability with a 40.5. So the White Sox are trailing the Dodgers by over 28 points of watchability. Now, obviously, we can't compare star power to the Dodgers, but in the rest of the categories they are getting smoked as well. Being 29th in watchability is not where you want to be. It is not where you want to be. It's one of my favorite indexes. It's a faux index, but it's one of my favorite
Sure, it's
indexes.
very subjective, but it's fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I was pleasantly surprised to see the White Sox weren't dead last, but then I saw why they weren't dead last. And I don't know that I'll make it to a game at the rate this year. I probably, because of my gluten celiac allergy, I'm sure there's gluten hiding in that milkshake somewhere. So I'm not even sure I'll get to experience it. But yes, it's definitely bleak in terms of watchability this year. I don't know why you would go to the ballpark other than the milkshake. So actually, maybe the milkshake should have 2 or 3 points of watchability, and we could bring down some of the other categories to make up for that. That is about all the time we have for today, though. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on before we sign off?
Now, the milkshake's got me really hungry.
I know.
You're headed to four games in Kansas City. I would think there'll be at least one win there.
I would certainly hope so because Kansas City has not come out firing on all
No,
cylinders either.
they're doing very badly, and they're obviously not a good team. But who knows? They got to be more watchable just because of Bobby Witt Jr.
Yes, I believe that they are sitting a little prettier on the watchability index. Actually, let me tell you where they are here. They might be. They are quite a bit higher. So they are 20th. In watchability, and most of that comes from base running. Bobby Witt Jr. catches, sometimes Bobby Witt Jr. Only got a 2 for star power because, similar to us, you're dealing with one star essentially. They got a
Oh,
one and a
I
half with
believe the
Salvi
index also
Perez.
includes older stars. People would come to watch because of older guys. So I would think Salvi Perez would be included in that just
Yeah, they
because
didn't give him a whole
he's been
extra
around
point
forever,
for that,
hometown hero and
but
all that. And certainly
yeah.
Kansas City got a big thumbs down. They actually had a, when we talk about the billions that Jerry wants to build a monument to himself, they had it on the ballot whether to get a new
Right.
stadium downtown, and it lost by a 3-2 margin. So good luck,
Good
Jerry.
luck, Jerry. Yeah, absolutely.
It's the only way it goes is if the mayor is such an incredible idiot, and for some reason, and they just buy enough alderman to get it through.
Well, I'll leave you with this fun fact now that Oakland is leaving the Coliseum for Sacramento. Kansas City, if they stay in Kauffman, which it sounds like they will be the only a perfectly proportioned in terms of dimensions, the only evenly proportioned field
Really?
left in the American League, and one of two left in Major League Baseball, with the other being, do you know?
The Angels.
Dodger Stadium.
Oh, the Dodgers, yeah. The
Yep,
Angels. The
so.
Angels had one back in the old way. I'm taking this too long, but way black and white TV. There was a home run derby show, TV show, not just at the All Star. Every week, two stars would go and head it off. It could be Mickey
Huh.
Mantle versus Willie Mays. I mean, it was two big stars because guys didn't make any money in those days, so a little extra TV money.
Yeah.
And that was in the old Wrigley Field that I believe the Angels originally played in as pros, but it was a minor league field. It was a triple A field, and that they used that both because it's in Los Angeles and you got a lot of film crews, but because it was perfectly symmetrical.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, it's going to be down to the Royals and the Dodgers. My guess is with the Angels, when they added that weird mountain range thing in center field, that altered
Yeah.
their symmetry on the field because they are not a symmetrical ballpark anymore. But yeah, so you got that, Royals fans, at least.
Well,
I guess that's interesting. I don't know.
it's a that's a nice park. It's got the water fountain out there and everything. I don't know what their big deal is other than just wanting to grab public money because they're very rich and they think taxpayers owe them.
Yeah, which is interesting because Royals ownership doesn't actually have a reputation for that kind of thing. They're
No.
actually a kind of a very respected ownership amongst MLB fans. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes, and
They're
if the
threatening to
Royals
move
are
across the
able to
state
secure
line into
something.
Kansas and just all kinds of other stupidity.
That kind of crap backfires like crazy. It's not going to help their cause. But anyway, we will watch non-symmetrical baseball at guaranteed rate in every sense of the term. I don't think anything will be lining up beautifully and pristinely for the White Sox this year. But there's a long way to go. We are 1-4. We do have the opportunity to go 158-4. So let's see if that comes to fruition or if things go continue their downhill slide towards 100 losses. But thanks so much for being here, and we will catch you next time on Sharing Socks.